KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Coming up very shortly, the city of Phoenix has to make some decisions regarding what is known as Talking Stick Resort Arena. I realize that they paid for that, but I call it by a variety of names, none of them Talking Stick Arena.
Just go where the Suns play.
Okay.
All right.
What, didn't it used to be called U.S. Air Center?
Yeah, you had that.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It was American Airlines involved at one point? I don't remember. Anyway, joining us right now is Christine Mackey. We're going to call her Chris. How's that? She is the Director of Community and Economic Development for the City of Phoenix. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. We laid out a little bit that there is a scheduled vote next week. Help us understand a little bit about what it is they're going to be voting on.
Absolutely. So the City of Phoenix is the owner of the Talking Stick Resort Arena. We have owned it since 1992, so we're the landlord to the Suns and the other events that happen in the arena. The arena is in need of a remodel. It's a 25-year-old building, and as you can imagine, it's getting a bit long in the tooth. So the city is looking at making investments in its public infrastructure, so the mechanical systems, the pipes, the air conditioning systems, the electrical systems, escalators, elevators, that type of thing.
So we're talking about plans of spending about $150 million to upgrade. And it's also my understanding that there will be about another $25 million over the course of this 15-year deal.
Kind of so a maintenance.
We have $175 million. That's not chump change. And so while you are planning, not you particularly, but the council is looking to vote on this Wednesday, when do the people of Phoenix get to have a say as to whether or not they want the money to go for this?
So we've been working on this transaction for the last 4 or 5 years, having that discussion with the Suns owner who manages the facility for the City of Phoenix. And our citizens have been regularly calling in and talking to our city council members. They're not shy. They make sure that their voice is heard. Our agenda formally posted last evening. So for the next week, they'll have the chance to call and talk to their council members. They also can attend the city council meeting at 3 o'clock next Wednesday if they'd like to talk to them in that public forum. But their constituents have regularly been calling them both for and against the arena.
Yeah, and you can understand. And Chris, I'm going to say that I know that you listen to us, so you've probably heard me rant and rave against publicly funded stadiums, and that there is a fundamental argument as to whether or not this is a investment in the sense of there is a return on it, or is this some form of corporate welfare? You're talking about an owner of a sports team who's a billionaire. The value of the team has gone up greatly since he purchased the team, since the ownership group bought the Suns. There are plenty of people, counting as one of them, Chris, who thinks, well, let them pay for it.
So a couple of different responses I would have to that. So first, let's talk about being a building owner. So just like anybody would that owns an office building, if I own an office building and my building gets older, I'm responsible for keeping up the mechanical workings and the common areas and the maintenance of the building. That's my landlord responsibility.
Okay.
As the tenant does the improvements that the tenant wants to do that's above what the landlord needs to do to keep that office building in good working order.
Paint the walls.
Exactly. If they want to, you know, if they want to put in gold carpet or they want to put in artwork or things that the landlord otherwise doesn't pay for, that's what happens. And we have that same relationship with the Suns. We own a building and we've owned that building for the last 25 years. And we need to make those investments in maintaining the building, whether the Suns play in that building or not. So we have
that
responsibility.
You're going to own it either way.
Either way, we own the building.
Okay. Okay.
I think what's also important to note, though, is that we receive revenue off of that building of close to $13 million a year. And some is rent from the Sun, some are taxes, some are from other areas. So we receive a revenue off of that building. And kind of on that final note is that the money that we use to pay for those investments is paid for by people who are visiting Phoenix, not by our citizens. So it's a tax that's on our hotels and our rental cars. So So if I stay in a hotel room in downtown Phoenix because I'm going to go to a concert, then I'm absolutely paying for part of the arena. But if I don't use a rental car and I don't use a hotel room, then I'm not putting any taxpayer money into that building.
Yeah, but that it's still money. It's still money that taxpayers may not want spent on an arena. They may want it spent on more police officers. They may want it spent on other things. And so while we're talking to Chris Mackey, Director of Community and Economic Development for the City of Phoenix, and Chris, at the onset, you said that the city has been talking with the Suns owners for about 4 years. I really have only been hearing about this potential deal to spend $150 million to upgrade the arena over the last month or so. How does the city react to the perception that is out there within some that the reason why council is moving quickly on this right now is because there is a runoff campaign that's going to be happening in March, and both of the candidates for the city mayor have said that they will not prioritize spending millions of dollars on this facility. There's a perception that this is kind of being fast-tracked right now to circumnavigate that vote in March. Your response?
Sure. I can see why the perception is that it might look that way. What we're up against is an obsolescence clause that was put into the contract back in the late 1980s. On July 1st, the Suns can declare obsolescence in the building, and then it takes it out of the city's hands to be able to focus on putting our money into the infrastructure of the building. It goes to an arbitrator, and then the arbitrator decides what it would take for us to keep that building alive. And the city then makes 100% of the investment, where now the contract reads about no more than $150 million for the city of Phoenix and $80 million for the Suns. Any of the improvements through the arbitration that would be needed to keep the Suns here in Phoenix would be 100% on the city side. And what we're working against right now is in the off season is when everyone would like to do the work. So we're coming up against a time through that process that the building would go dark for the summer when the Suns aren't playing and the work would like to be done during that time.
We're talking again to Chris Mackey, the Director of Community and Economic Development for the City of Phoenix, as this deal, the vote, impending vote on what will be a total of about $230 million package that would renovate Talking Stick Resort Arena. Thank you for my friend Danny reminding me. America West Arena. Can we just go with the America West Arena still? They're not even around. Nobody can get offended by that. That's what I remember it as growing up. And is there a concern? And how would you address the idea? And I realize there's some deadlines here, but is passing a deal now and then the mayor coming in later who had no say in it, can you see where that can be problematic?
You know, as we are working towards getting the arena and keeping it alive for 130 events a year, the Suns only play in the arena about 30% of the nights that the building's active. Okay. And it creates $182 million economic impact on an annual basis to the city of Phoenix. What's most important to us is to keep that building alive and moving forward and vibrant for downtown. We've had people who, over the last few years, have made hundreds of millions of dollars of private dollar investment in downtown Phoenix, counting on the fact that the city of Phoenix would keep up and continue driving downtown Phoenix to be a vibrant economic driver. And it is our responsibility to ensure that we keep downtown Phoenix drawing individuals into downtown. 40 million people have been in that building since it was constructed, and we need to be able to keep it moving forward.
Chris, thank you for your time today. We do appreciate it. That's Chris Mackey, the Director of Community and Economic Development for the City of Phoenix, as this deal, this impending deal, for the America West Arena, the home of the Phoenix Suns, which I can acknowledge. The Suns play, 81 home games? So the other events, there's concert events, there's Disney on Ice, there's monster trucks, God knows what else goes on down there. Maybe the bigger question then, and as you heard it, the city of Phoenix owns the building, whether the Suns play in it or not. Okay. Who the hell thought it was a good idea to own a stadium? maybe that's the bigger. Who thought it was a good idea to own an arena or a stadium? Like, maybe that's the bigger argument.
Right, but they're in this situation now.
Agreed.
So you kind of
what are you going to do with it?
You got to deal with what you're given now.
And I think that's kind of one of the frustrations for people like myself who would just say, "Let's cut bait and move on. It looks like it'll be a lovely parking lot someday." That you have poured so much money down this hole now that you're like, "Well, we can't possibly stop pouring money down the hole. This is a money hole. We have to keep doing it. Eventually, we'll pile enough money up and we can walk away." Like, this doesn't solve itself.
And the story doesn't go away. I mean, again, they're going to be voting on Wednesday. You heard Chris Mackey there, Director of Community and Economic Development with the City of Phoenix, saying that they are looking for public comment. So if you've been chomping at the bit listening to us discuss this, if you're on Bruce's side or if you're on the side of, no, we need to keep the Suns down there and, you know, we need to renovate the facility. I'm not telling you which side to be on. I'm simply saying whatever side you're on, make your voice is heard.
Yeah. Listen, again, do let yourself be heard, and we'll see how the city council comes down. We'll obviously be covering that next week. A father punishing his daughter, quote unquote, goes viral. Well, it went viral not by accident, on purpose. And is that the problem? Is it about punishing your child, or is it about publicly shaming and punishing your child?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, that's that Brophy prep story we talked about a couple weeks ago, where Brophy had sent out a
preemptive
memo saying we want to make you aware, and apparently maybe some of the worst case scenario has come true. We'll find out more information on that of different priests accused of inappropriate behavior at Brophy prep, and we'll get more of that for you here. So there's a video that's been going around of a dad in Swanton, Ohio. I have no idea where Swanton, Ohio is, but it looks chilly, Pamela. And there's a 10-year-old girl, his daughter, who is not allowed to ride the school bus anymore because she's accused of bullying.
She got kicked off the bus for 3 days because she was bullying other kids on the school bus. So 10-year-old goes home, tells dad, "Guess what? You've got to drive me to school for 3 days next week because I'm not allowed to ride the bus." Dad says, "Yeah, you know what? I'm not driving you to school."
Matt Cox says his daughter Kirsten was kicked off the school bus for 3 days for bullying another student. He posted this video on Facebook giving a narration as he followed little Kirsten in his car.
She said, "Daddy, you're going to have to take me to school next week." As you see this morning, she is learning otherwise.
What you'll see in the video is dad is in the car. He's driving and he's videotaping out of the front windshield of his car. In front of him is his 10-year-old daughter, all bundled up in a coat, and she's walking. She's walking the 5 miles to school, 36 degrees outside. Well, that seems a little extreme to me as a parent. I don't see it as abusive either.
It doesn't reach to that level.
No. Yeah. If this is how you choose to discipline your child, then that's your choice as a parent. I would choose something other, but it's not my child. So I'm not going to pass judgment on this father for the way he chose to discipline his child in a way that I don't think was abusive. To me, what is abusive about this video, Bruce, is just that. There is a video. He did not have to videotape his daughter and then broadcast it for the world to see, publicly shaming her.
Parents need to hold their kids accountable. So that was me showing how I'm holding my kid accountable. Bullying is unacceptable, especially in my household.
Parents need to hold their kids accountable. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And you get to determine how you hold them accountable. This is me showing people how I hold my kid accountable. Right. I don't need to see it.
Don't care. Right. And this is the if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, did it. So if you punished your daughter and you did it privately and you didn't make a video of it and you didn't post it everywhere, did you still punish your daughter?
Disciplining a child is one thing. Shaming and humiliating them is another. And that's exactly what this is. It is a dad who I would venture to say was probably bullied by his parents in some capacity, shamed, humiliated by his parents in some capacity, and the cycle continues because that's how he deems it appropriate for doing this to his own daughter. Mm. Chime in on our open mic line, 602-200-2733. We asked you to do that, and oh, you did. Here's what you had to say.
Hi, this is Jennifer in Scottsdale. I have a fundamental issue with trying to teach a lesson about bullying another child. by bullying your own.
Yeah.
It's kind of like telling your child not to hit and punishing them by spanking them.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
I'm going to teach you to hit your brother by hitting you. Good luck on that, by the way. I mean, you know, think that one through. Try
this
the logic.
Danielle.
Hold on. Let's get Danielle back here.
This is Danielle from Phoenix. I think the punishment fits. And with everything being about social media these days, as a 42-year-old mother, you know, everything's on social media. That's kind of where us as parents tend to turn. And I think that's why the dad did that. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily, but that's kind of how it goes these days.
It doesn't have to go that way. No, I don't agree with
that. She's 10 years old, first off. She's not 18. And this is what she's famous for. Think about that.
And not only that, Bruce, she's famous for it because...
because her dad did it to her.
Not because
she was caught on a security cam or somebody videotaped it without her knowledge.
The man who is supposed to protect her did this to her. Now, if he wants to discipline her and teach her a lesson, yeah, that's what dads do too. And I have zero problem with that. But to humiliate her because you're looking for some sort of justification to show the world how great of a dad you are? No, you epically failed.
Well, by this argument, if you're going to spank him, you should do it in the front yard and call all the neighbors first.
Robin from Peoria, I totally agree with the punishment. They shouldn't bully, but do not publicize it. That was wrong.
Yeah, I totally agree with that caller.
Yeah.
You can discipline your child, as you should. That is called parenting. You're not their friend, you're their parent. But you also need to be their support system. And it's just, you're telling her not to bully by bullying her. And this dad thinks, you know what, he's won the battle. But I'm just afraid that, you know, by videotaping it, he's going to lose the war.
I want to learn more. We're gonna try to get the update on this Brophy story because
it is going on
as we speak. Where disturbing news coming out of inappropriate behavior by priests going back to the 50s at Brophy Prep. We'll talk about that coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So about 3 weeks ago, there was a letter from the president of Brophy College Preparatory, right here in Central Phoenix, letting parents and alumni know that there was a report that would be coming out about sexual abuse allegations against minors by priests. Well, the report is now out. It just came out, and we are finding out not only the number, but the names of some of the priests who have been alleged, and let's be clear, alleged at this point to be involved.
So what we have right now is a list of names of priests and brothers who have had credible accusations of sexual abuse of minors. And some of these accusations, Bruce, go back as far as 1950.
Okay.
And what we're starting to learn right now, and this is breaking news, so we're digesting it as soon as we're giving it to you guys.
We're reading PDFs.
Yeah, and we're finding out that 8 priests on this list have worked at Brophy College Preparatory.
How many priests are on the list total?
Great question.
I think it's 130 names total.
Martha Mallard?
Yeah, it's at least 125.
125,
you know, we had to count them by hand, so, you know, forgive us if we missed a few.
No.
But
125 priests that they used, not my words, there was credible allegations.
So 8 have worked at Brophy College Prep. Here's the other aspect of that I think is really important to point out. Only one, and I'm not trying to downplay that, but only one of those 8 priests that have been linked to Brophy College Prep are accused of a sexual crime while working at Brophy College
Prep. So if I understand correctly, there's 130 priests. I want to say they said there were over 70 schools total that this group, Jesuits West, provided priests to. And when you cross-reference them, only one of the priests on the list of allegations was also at Brophy Prep at that time. The other ones, the other seven names that we have, the allegations of sexual misconduct, inappropriate behavior happened at another school, but they still taught at Brophy either before or after the allegation.
Yeah, there's one for a Father Whiten who worked at Brophy between 1972 and 1977.
Okay.
He was accused of sexual abuse of a minor in 2008 at Sacred Heart, California. So you get how this happens. He had worked there at one point in time. The allegations weren't leveled at him
at that point.
Brophy.
Right.
They were leveled at a different place,
well,
but they're still letting people know that this individual has been accused.
I appreciate the attempts at some transparency, because the Catholic priest abuse scandals revealed to us, and this will be the question, obviously, as we move forward, that if you knew a priest had a credible allegation against them, instead of dealing with them, you just moved them to another place that they didn't know about the allegations. Is that why we see these priests moving around between these schools either before or after the allegations were made against
them? I think it's also important to give folks the information of that one priest who was accused of sexual abuse of a minor while working at Brophy.
Oh, okay.
Eugene Colosimo?
Let's go with Colosimo.
Okay. Eugene Colosimo, accused of sexual abuse of a minor between 1957 and 1959.
Yeah. So obviously a while ago, yes.
He worked at Brophy between 1955 and 1960, so that accusation came from the high school. It was filed in 1993, and he passed away in 2006. I know that's a lot of numbers,
yeah,
but I know that there are a lot of people listening that, you know, that, you know, maybe not necessarily went to Brophy at that point in time, but does that name ring a bell?
I think there's going to be other names on this list.
Well, when you take a look, I'm trying to find it here. There was one in particular. Okay, that one jumped out to me. Thomas O'Rourke. Thomas O'Rourke worked at Brophy from 1975 to 1993.
Okay.
He was accused of sexual abuse of a minor in 1969, before he came to Brophy, right?
He was accused before he showed up at Brophy.
Unfortunately, Bruce, you and I have to talk about these kinds of stories all too often.
Yeah.
And you learn some uncomfortable details by covering these kinds of stories all too often. And in the coverage of the Catholic Church scandal,
yeah,
we and pedophiles in general, you learn that if they do it once, there's a good chance it's happened several times.
They rarely have one instance of sexual abuse of a minor and never do it again. That is the oddity.
I bring that up simply because as these names come out,
yeah,
and as you have, you know, Father Scott Santa Rosa with Jesuit West talking about this, will you start to get more people who come forward?
Well,
I have to publicly say that we have, and I have to also say that we are sorry. And we realize the wrong, and we bring these cases to justice. And I have to receive people's anger. I do feel I have a responsibility to receive people's anger.
Fair. Listen, the people that are in charge today, there is no, we don't know right now. I'm not accusing them of being a part of a cover-up or knowing about this. I appreciate the fact that they say, hey, we have to deal with this. This is our reality, and this is what's going on. But I find it strains credibility to think that there are, on this list, a total of 125 names, over 70 different schools with religious affiliations to this Jesuits West, and that the claims and allegations jump from school to school in some cases, and that they didn't know they were moving around pedophile priests or friars. They didn't. It's strange credibility that the reason some of these people were transferred was when allegations, whispers, whatever started to come forward, and they said, it's getting too hot here, we need to move them. That's what we saw with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has admitted that. They've admitted it. What is going on at Brophy Prep? The names are coming out. The dates are coming out right now.
I don't know if what's going on at Brophy Prep in particular. I think that it's more along the lines of what was going on within the Jesuit order.
That too, yeah.
And, you know, St. Francis Xavier in Phoenix is Arizona's only Jesuit parish. Brophy, the only Jesuit secondary school in Arizona. Most of the priests in Arizona, you know, they're with the diocese, mm-hmm, totally mm-hmm. different. But obviously a story that can touch a lot of lives in the community. So we are continuing to digest it. Our newsroom is working hard on this right now. And I'm sure there will be some new developments on this throughout the day. So keep it locked here to KTAR.
I think you made the point also that sometimes when these allegations start to come forward and these names start to come forward, will other people start to come forward?
That's what happened with the Catholic Church.
I'm only going by history.
Yeah.
That's what we saw. Wow. It's a day you probably need to have a little bit of your faith in humanity restored. Pamela says she can do that for you. Coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The Oscars are still months away, but at least we know who won't be hosting it. We have the list down to one.
Yeah, right.
We know who won't be hosting the Oscars, and that is comedian, actor, Kevin Hart.
Yeah, he's not going to be hosting. He stepped down because he was asked to apologize.
Kevin Hart was announced as the host of the Academy Awards on Tuesday. That's when the tweets resurfaced. They were posted about 8 years ago. In them, he used offensive language about gay people. But then, when he posted two emotional responses on Instagram today, there was no apology.
Yeah, so apparently the Academy called him and said, hey, apologize. This was his response to that.
So I just got a call from the Academy, and that call basically said, Kevin, apologize for your tweets of old. I chose to pass. I passed on the apology. The reason why I passed is because I've addressed this several times.
Okay, I pass. I don't want to apologize. I've done it already. I'm not going to do it again.
Here's one of the... I read the tweets as him, he's a comedian, trying to make jokes. You can think they're funny or not. Some jokes work or some don't. One of them was, he's laughing, LOL, at all the women asking me where the pic is. I don't know if he's referring to something. I'm not passing along a pic of a naked man. That would make me gay by association. That was in 2009. Okay. He's trying to make a joke. You can argue he's not funny, but should that in and of itself mean you can't host the Oscars of all things?
Because I don't think
he obviously
means...
works. He does other stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it means you can't host the Oscars. Not by
Maybe
any way, shape, or form. No.
Maybe just the Oscars, because the rest of Hollywood doesn't have a problem with
him. No, I don't think
he's
that
in,
at
like,
all.
Every third movie,
The Oscars, the Academy, is an industry, is a business. And they were employing Kevin to host their big event. So his employer asked him to apologize. He took a pass. So he was in jeopardy of potentially being fired, so he walked away.
You can't fire me, I quit.
He tweeted, I have made the choice to step down from hosting this year's Oscars. This is because I do not want to be a distraction on a night that should be celebrated by so many amazing, talented artists. I sincerely apologize to the LGBTQ community for my insensitive words from my past.
I see. This is this public flogging that goes on. I agree, and I appreciate his principled stand that he says, I've apologized for these 9-year-old, 8, 9, 10-year-old tweets. They were immature. They were stupid. They were insensitive. He's posted those back when they – this is not the first time they've resurfaced. It's not like the first time anybody went back and looked at Kevin Hart's Twitter feed. He's apologized for him, and he said, he's basically making the argument, how many times do I need to apologize for this?
And I get the argument. I do. People change.
Every time he has
apologized, but then he takes a pass on apologizing only to apologize. Like, if that was your principled stance and you're saying, I've already apologized for this, I'm not going to allow it to keep getting drug up and holding me accountable for something that I've already apologized for, so I take a pass. Period, full stop. Fine. But then he apologizes, so I'm confused. Really, in the grand scheme of things, this impacts my life nil. So, whatevs.
At least, again, we know the one person who won't be hosting the Oscars. We've got down. There's still 330 million of you that have a chance, all right? I wish you loads of luck, all right? Still might be one of the reasons why we're going to hang in a handbasket. Pamela says she restored your faith in humanity.
Yeah, and I think Carolyn and Judith from Ithaca, New York, may in fact restore your faith in humanity, because these two ladies last spring heard about a company. It's called RIP Medical Debt. Now, this company purchases bundles of past due medical bills and then forgives them to help those that are in need. So these two ladies decided they were going to start fundraising and help people with their medical debt. And over the summer, they raised about $12,500. They sent it in to the debt forgiveness charity, which then purchased, Bruce, get this, a portfolio of $1.5 million of medical debt on their behalf for about a penny on the dollar. And they forgave it all. All of it. So it has become increasingly easy for like regular people like Carolyn and Judith to purchase these bundles of past due medical bills and forgive them, because there is this effort by this debt relief charity, this RIP Medical Debt. It was founded by two former debt collection industry executives. And after realizing their crushing impact that like medical debt is having on millions of Americans, the men decided to flip their mindset. They began purchasing portfolios of old debt to clear them as a public service rather than trying to hound the debtors.
I saw a TV thing about a news piece about these guys.
Did you see John Oliver? John Oliver did it.
Is that what it was? Is that what I'm thinking of it?
Yeah, John Oliver actually did this. He donated $60,000
to get rid of.
And when he by that $60,000, Bruce, it forgave $15 million in medical debt through the charity.
Wow. There you go. Restoring your faith in humanity. Pretty darn amazing, right? Hey, thanks for spending some time with us this week. We appreciate it. And look through the Double Pain Bulletproof class at DJ Tommy Two-Tone, Super Producer Stevie Z, and Martha Maurer. She'll continue to give the latest on this Brophy Prep story.